From the album Mood Swings, Russell Gunn on trumpet, and the composition Park Avenue Suite. The Jazz Cat, as you know, travels abroad, travels quite a bit throughout the United States, as a matter of fact. And a couple weeks ago, we were in Chicago. He could be in the Monterey Peninsula at the Monterey Jazz Festival. Many of you went out to see him at the Dizzy's Den. And he might have been at the Way Street Studios producing a concert or two. But here he is today, right here live with the Jazz Cat Show. And let's introduce Leroy Downs with his special guest today. Leroy?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
All right, take it away.
Well, you know, special guest indeed. Every time we try to bring you someone old, someone new, but definitely hip every time. And if you want to talk about hip in jazz music, we're talking about trumpet player Russell Gunn. What's happening, Russell?
Hey, man, what's happening?
Oh, man, you and the music.
I'm just trying to make it happen.
Well, you know, you are, man. And, you know, I want to talk about a couple of things. Stories, life experiences, you know, joy and tragedies and different percentages that are disseminated are all a part of the human experience. But how much truth and emotion are weaved into the messages of your music?
Well, for me personally, almost every recording that I make is probably, you know, it stems from whatever is going on in you know, my normal everyday life. At that point, I think my latest record, Love Stories, is pretty much along those lines. I try to deal with the truth of myself. I try to be honest with myself about where I am musically, you know, emotionally, and all things in between.
You know, Love Requiem is one of my favorite albums, man. How was it working with Stefan Harris in creating such a powerful vibe with the music?
Yeah, well, Love Stories was actually my favorite record until this record, Love Stories, actually. It was a really great experience for me to do that record. That was actually the first time that I decided that the entire recording was going to be conceptual and about one particular thing. And at that time, I was still living in New York, and I pretty much gathered the greatest musicians that I knew from what we consider my generation of musicians that were in New York at that time to be on this record. And everybody was happy to be a part of it. I mean, from Stefan Harris, Mark Turner, Myron Walden, I mean, you know, everybody on that record was so great. And for them to give themselves up to the conception of what I was dealing with, which was basically a story about me breaking up with my wife,
yeah,
I thought it was my best record up until now.
Well, you know, like I said, those are kind of all of the emotions. Every time something happens with us, you know, we go through anger, we go through love, here we go through, you know, realizing that this has happened. We go through sorrow, you know, all of these different feelings, and I know you got them on that album. But tell me, what's happening with this latest album that you have?
Well, Love Stories is basically an examination of love from, I guess, the flip side, and I like to consider it the real side. I think the title of the record is a little bit deceiving and intended to do so. I've actually had people, promoters or things like that, without even listening to the record, dismiss it, or not to me, but to my manager when she was trying to get something booked or something, because they just assume that a record called Love Stories is about the same old everyday, you know, I love you songs. But it's actually it's an examination of the darker side of love, and to say that love really isn't even a true emotion. It's more of a fantasy, and all of the shadier parts of love is what I'm trying to deal with. Like, I'm in love with the stripper, and you don't love me, and you know, those are just a few of the titles. But I just wanted to really examine that emotion in its entirety.
Well, you just mentioned a very popular song. By the way, you're listening to the great Russell Gunn, trumpet player, right here on the show, live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM. KRML Jazz and Blues Radio on the For Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. And as I mentioned, you just mentioned a popular song, and as many of my listeners here may not know, I mean, I actually grew up listening to hip-hop music before I discovered jazz, so my ears are tuned into both facilities. And actually, not only is the blend of both genres hip, it brings the entire spectrum of generations together to not only enjoy the music, but perhaps learn something about one or each other's different styles of music. And you're one of the pivotal people in that, because you play in the jazz world and you also play, I don't want to necessarily say the hip-hop world, but in other genres as well. And you bring that music together, and it sounds like that's what you did on this latest album.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, since my first, I guess what you would consider my foray into that, with my first ethnomusicology recording, you know, people have always said that, man, you're doing, you know, something that's futuristic, or you're pushing an envelope. And I, one, have never even thought of it in that way. I've always thought that that's how it's supposed to be. That's how great musicians have always done it. Not likening myself to one of the great musicians, but people that push the envelope is not, you know, a conscious effort. It is what it is. The nature of jazz music is changed anyway. And it's the rhythmic aspect of it is what changes it all the time. So I don't really consider myself doing anything that's, you know, special. I just consider myself being one of the few that actually does what it's supposed to be doing.
Well, you just deal with the natural creativity of what the music means to you, and you put it out like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a place for all the incarnations of jazz music, whether it be straight ahead, whether it be New Orleans music, there's a place for all of it, but there definitely has to be that place for it to grow, and especially from a rhythmic aspect. I mean, it's been allowed to grow with the drums, like in Afro-Cuban music is what they call it, or even in classical music, it's been allowed to grow and flourish, and I'm just hoping one of these days that it's allowed to grow and flourish and with the hip-hop sensibility.
I'm sure it will. You're listening to Russell Gunn right here on the show, live with the Jazz Cat. I'm Leroy Downs, and it's on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio on the For Locals Only show with Gary Hamada. Well, you mentioned something about pushing the envelope. I mean, in this society, we get so chastised when we stand up and express our opinions for that those things that may not be so popular. I mean, either, you know, we live with what oppresses us, or we stand up and let it be known about how we feel. And musicians like Max Roach and Abby Lincoln and Charles Mingus, Nina Simone, and others have taken their artistic fortitude and delivered messages through their music. You mentioned ethnomusicology. You have an array of albums, but ethnomusicology, too, seemed to make the broadest statement on your album cover.
Yeah. That cover actually grew from a fairly interesting story. After I recorded Ethnomusicology Volume 1, I was still living in New York, but I left New York and I moved to Atlanta, where I live now. And I would say about maybe a month or so, I'm not sure, maybe a month or so after the record came out, I got a call from one of the people at the record company. It was Atlantic Records, called me to inform me that they would be dropping me. The record had just came out. It hadn't even gotten a chance. It was just in the first quarter. But what was going on at the time was that all of the major labels that had jazz divisions were shutting down, and they were shutting down the jazz division, period. And Atlantic was one of them. And as you know now, Atlantic is a part of a conglomerate of labels, which isn't even owned by a record label anymore. I think it's owned by a liquor company.
Hmm.
But the point was is that it was explained to me that there was a meeting soon after my record came out, and a bunch of other records came out at the label. And basically what they did was they compared numbers. And, you know, my record, you know, all of the records that came out, that was my record, and then there were all of the rap releases and the R&B releases and the pop releases. And, you know, my numbers didn't look good. I had a jazz record. So basically, I was dropped from the label before it even had a chance. But the irony was, that record was nominated for a Grammy. And after I received the nomination, the president of the label called me, and he was telling me how happy he was that I was on the label. Had no idea that they had even dropped me, period. And I just, you know, I just felt, I mean, I felt whatever that is that you feel. And I don't even really know how to describe the emotion of, like, man, what the is going on? It's like, I mean, do people even really care, period? So that's where that cover kind of grew out of. I just felt like, you know, this music is really not going to stand, doesn't stand a chance. And that's basically where I got the idea for that cover from.
Well, if you don't know the particular picture of the cover that we're talking about, it, you can look it up. It's Ethnomusicology 2 by Russell Gunn, as well as the rest of Russell's music. Well, you mentioned Atlanta. What's happening in Atlanta? I mean, I know that the South is at the top of the market when it comes to hip-hop, and I'm certainly hoping you're interjecting some serious jazz into the mix. And what is crunk jazz?
Well, crunk jazz, that actually grew from actually one of my first experiences after I moved here. And I guess I could preface that by the reason that I moved here was that, I guess, as you know, I'm really big into hip-hop. And at the time in New York City, the only access to any hip-hop music was only hip-hop music that basically came from the East Coast. It was pretty much, all radio was pretty much dominated by East Coast artists. And I felt like just people in general weren't getting the full spectrum of hip-hop. And rhythmically, I felt like in the South that's where hip-hop music needed to be. And I wanted to be a part of it. So I packed and I left and I moved here. And maybe probably about a week after I moved here, I did a recording with CeeLo, who was part of a group called the Goody Mob. And CeeLo is probably one of the most talented artists that you're ever going to come across, singer, rapper, producer. So, and one of the songs that we did on his record, was it was really popular, it was called Basshead Jazz, which really kind of got me, you know, going in that rhythmic direction, jazz melody and harmony over top of a specific southern kind of hip-hop rhythmic bass. And it kind of grew out of there, so I started writing a bunch of tunes with that, you know, with that feel in mind, and that's what happened. I got all the musicians that I could find in Atlanta together, and we did it. And it was pretty much a self-funded project, and one of the projects that I'm most proud of. And that's basically it, crunk jazz, and it's pretty much self-explanatory. The word crunk itself, a lot of people really don't know what that means either, but it's basically an Atlanta word that means to be, like, really excited or, you know, something like that. It's like when the kids are
actually full of energy.
Yeah, full of energy. Basically, that's it.
That's Russell Gunn right here on the show, live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio on the For Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. Well, when you think of many of the trumpet players like Lee Morgan and Freddie Hubbard, Don Cherry and Brownie, you know, they were all some very, very cool cats and, you know, some real hip innovators, and you fit right into that tradition. But tell me about this release, about the music of Mr. Dewey Davis that moved you to do that album.
Well, you know, for the longest time, well, I'm from East St. Louis. I actually went to the exact same high school that Miles Davis went to, and I'll never forget when I first, my first day of band practice in high school, the band director says to me, "Son, you know there's a tradition here that you're probably never going to be able to live up to, so you need to get your stuff together." and he was talking about Miles, and it was actually that turned me off from Miles Davis. And with my personality, I felt like, well, then that's exactly what I need not be. And there was years, probably 5 or 6 years after that, that I wouldn't even listen to his music, period, just so I could avoid the obvious, comparisons to him. But once there was no, avoiding his genius, when I really started getting into him, and actually when I play Straight Ahead now, I think I probably sound more like Miles than I sound like anybody else, even though Lee Morgan is my personal idol, and Booker Little is my favorite trumpet player.
Yeah.
I don't really sound like them as much when I play as I think I sound like Miles as when I'm just playing over some tunes. But it was years before I would even allow myself to be talked about in the same breath as Miles Davis. I discovered the genius, that there was nothing that I would be able to do that would allow me to even do anything remotely that could challenge whatever he did. Not challenge. That's probably a poor choice of words, but so I just didn't touch it for the longest time, and then I finally relented, and I felt that I owed so much of what I do to him. I play like him, and plus his music has influenced me so much, and with the obvious, the way he changed and he went with the rhythmic trends. So I owe him so much, so I felt like it was time for me to go ahead and acknowledge that.
Well, it always takes a little time. I mean, when you're presented with one thing at first that you don't like, I mean, in those 5 or 6 years, you grow up as an individual, and as an individual and as a musician, and you start thinking about these things, and you don't look at Miles Davis the same way. You're able to approach it from a different aspect and not really deal with what your instructor may have told you first off, but now deal with your own feelings about what you think about Miles Davis, and you came back around and you took Miles on your own terms.
Yeah, well, I think Miles' biggest influence on me is the way I run an ensemble. I personally like to surround myself with the best people that I can, which is exactly what he did. I mean, as great as he was, Kinda Blue wouldn't have been Kinda Blue without Train and Cannonball and Wynton Kelly.
Oh, absolutely.
And Cobb and PC. So any of those records, Bitches Brew, or any of those things, he knew how to pick the right people to get across what he wanted to get across. And he was more of a, I think he was more of a producer than a musician. And I think that's what I try to do mostly. I try to get the best people that I possibly can that I write for the job.
Well, that's what they do in business, too, because even when, some business people, they don't know everything, but if they surround themselves with the geniuses, they're gonna make it happen.
Yeah, man. That's what you do. That's what software companies do,
That's right.
Bill Gates didn't design all of that software. He just got the baddest little college kids that he could find, and that's what you do.
That's where the genius lies, too, man. Well, tell me about the theory behind your larger ensemble project, Bionic.
Bionic is basically the ensemble that deals with the music of the crunk jazz record. And the basic concept behind just the word Bionic for the band is basically the same as the TV show The Bionic Man. Like, here we are, we have music, and it's not dead. We have the technology to make it better. Why not do that? So that's my the concept behind the group Bionic.
Well, that's great, man. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we don't get a chance to see enough of you here on the West Coast, and would certainly like to do that. I know you're coming out here with the singer Neo to do some stuff, but are you going to be out here with your band as well?
I'm really not sure how soon we're going to be back out there. We're just trying to get some stuff rolling out. I've been in Neo's band since April, And I'm sure some of your listeners might know that he has a record that just came out, so we're doing a lot of things for that right now. So I'm trying to figure out how to get mine in while I'm getting in, actually making some money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is the most important. In these days and times, if anyone doesn't realize that, you have to get paid out here, bro, and you can't help nobody else out. So I make it a point. I've played with a lot of R&B artists, and luckily I've been blessed enough to play with some of the great ones. I was in D'Angelo's band, I was in Maxwell's band for a little while, and now I'm in Neo's band. So I've been luckily it's not been strictly for the money. The music that we're dealing with is music on a high level also, even it being something different from what I normally do. So and it allow me to make a living, which in turn allows me to take my band somewhere else to help other people out. So
right.
It's kind of a holistic approach, but it has to be done in these days and times.
Making money to fund the jazz. We love that. Yep. Hey, man, it's been beautiful talking with you. And we appreciate you coming on the show, man. Thanks so much.
And I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Russell Gunn, you heard it right here on the show, Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. Thank you.